This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 443.
This podcast is brought to you by Sidekick. I use muscle scraping tools from Sidekick to work on my hips, hamstrings, and feet. They're must-haves in my injury prevention toolbox. I recommend the My Personal PT Bundle. To take control of your injury recovery, go to sidekick.com/MTA to get 15% off your order. That's sidekick.com/MTA to save 15% off your order.
Thanks also to AG1, our favorite daily nutritional foundational supplement that supports your whole body health. You can try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/MTA. That's drinkag1.com/MTA. Hello and welcome to the MTA podcast, where we empower and inspire you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we speak with Emily Sisson, who finished second at the Olympic Marathon Trials and will be competing for the United States at the 2024 Olympics. And just a heads up, you don't have to figure it out on your own. You can get expert training and accountability to help you get faster, stronger, and better as a runner when you join the Academy. Learn more over at marathontrainingacademy.com. All right, so good to be behind the mic. Really excited about this conversation with Emily. But first, here's a really cool story I'm sure all of you have probably seen by now. Russell Cook, the hardest geezer, finished running up the coast of Africa.
That's right. This comes from the BBC. They reported that he crossed the finish line in Tunisia after 352 days. Before he set off on this mammoth challenge, he said he hoped to look back at his life and have no regrets. He's a 27-year-old from Worthing, West Sussex, and said he had struggled with his mental health, gambling, and drinking, and wanted to make a difference. And after running through 16 countries, he's raised in excess of £700,000 for charity. Some of the interesting and harrowing things from his journey: he and his support team had cameras, phones, cash, passports, and visas stolen in Angola on the 24th of June. Also, he was forced to take his first rest day after doctors found protein and blood in his urine on day 45. Another thing that was challenging was that he had reoccurring back pain, and it caused him a lot of concern. On day 200, Mr. Cook was forced to reduce his mileage and intensity at the request of a doctor. But in true hardest geezer style, he said he was not to be stopped. He said, quote, "I took a couple of days to get some scans, no bone damage, so figured the only option left was to stop mincing about like a little weasel, get the strongest painkillers available, and zombie stomp the road again." I think we need to use that one, stop mincing about like a little weasel.
You gotta say it with a British accent, though.
He was again forced to halt in Algeria while he waited to find out his fate as to whether he could secure permission to cross the border into Algeria. He said, "If we don't get the visas, then it is game over." His public appeal video on X was seen by 11 million people. The increased attention on the challenge eventually paid off as the UK's Algerian embassy announced he would receive a courtesy visa on the spot.
I can't imagine the logistics. Crossing all those borders, what a feat that was.
Yeah, for sure. While crossing the Sahara Desert, he decided to run through the night due to the intense daytime heat and sandstorms. Sounds like a smart move. He ended up finishing on April 8th, 10,000 miles and almost a year after he started.
No mincing about like a little weasel. Speaking of people who are not mincing about, we want to give some shout outs to folks in our community. We got members, clients, and also folks in the listening audience doing some cool stuff as usual. So, Angie, what do you got for us?
Well, we'd like to say congrats to Sue, a listener from Atlanta, Georgia, for completing her sixth star with the Tokyo Marathon. She's an inspirational person that we got to meet in Hawaii, and she started running at age 63. Tokyo was her 20th marathon, and she just celebrated turning 75.
Nice. Congrats, Sue, on finishing that sixth star and showing us what's possible when you get to be 75.
And this comes from Emily. She says, huge shout out to MTA coach Abby for helping me PR at the Corvallis Half Marathon in Oregon. My goal was to finish in under 1:35, and I was able to finish in 1:32. Coach Abby helped me BQ at the Chicago Marathon in October, and we've been working toward today's race goal as I prepare to pace my mom in the Eugene Marathon in 3 weeks. My mom is also a coaching client of Abby's, and we hope to get her a BQ in Eugene. Many thanks to MTA and Coach Abby for all of the running support and positive community.
Well, thank you for those nice words, Emily, and huge congrats on your PR.
And this comes from Robin. She says, I can't even begin to express my thanks to the GOAT coach, Athena, and the entire MTA fam. The podcast, training, and all the resources have taken me from my first marathon in 2020 with a time of 4:19 to my fifth marathon in 3:33:36.
Nice.
The Rebel Mount Charleston course was killer on the legs, and the last few miles were brutal, but the solid training enabled me to push through to the end with a 15-minute PR. What an amazing thing to get faster as I'm getting older. Thanks, MTA.
Love it. Super congrats on that, Robin. That's what we love to hear. And yeah, Rebel Mount Charleston, it's a fast race. We got a Revel race coming up. We'll be at Revel White Mountains next month. I know some of you that are listening will be there as well. And later this year, I'll be back at the Richmond Marathon. Already signed up for the Richmond Half again. It's kind of a tradition now, and the meetup that we have at the Richmond Marathon gets bigger and bigger every year. So Richmond Marathon, love to see you out there. It's going to be November 16th, of course, in Richmond, Virginia, which is the capital of Virginia. This is known as America's Friendliest Marathon due to the fact they have a great community. I mean, the fact that they invited me now the fourth year in a row. And really care about connecting with our listeners. It's just something special. And they show up big on race day with party stops. And of course, the finish line party is really something. So good chance to make Richmond a runcation this year in the fall.
And if you're not quite up to the marathon, they also have a half marathon and an 8K. So there's a distance for everyone.
Check them out. RichmondMarathon.org. It is a nonprofit. You're supporting a good cause. They're helping people get fit in the Richmond area. And it's a fun event. RichmondMarathon.org to discover the River City and cross the finish line this November. All right, well, we are honored to speak with professional runner Emily Sisson again. She is the American record holder in the marathon, and she's going to the Olympics 2024. We love watching the Olympics, and it's really cool to get to talk to Olympians in the marathon here on the podcast. So we're going to ask her about how her marathon went there at the Olympic trials, how she trains, and just more about her life and what she likes to do when she's not running. So, Angie, what else can we say about Emily Sisson?
She trains in Flagstaff, Arizona with New Balance, and she is a native of Wisconsin who graduated from Providence College in Rhode Island and is married to Shane Quinn.
Here's our conversation with Emily Sisson. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Now that I'm well on my way, well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Okay, we're on the podcast now with Emily Sisson joining us from Scottsdale, Arizona. Emily, welcome back to the MTA podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
And you said that you're in Scottsdale now, but you're heading up to Flagstaff. So what's the plan there?
Yeah, the plan is just to get some good altitude training in. And before I start my marathon build, I'll come down and do my marathon build at sea level. But I do benefit from altitude. I just don't love doing 115-mile weeks at altitude. So I'm going to – this is what I did before Chicago in 2022. I came down from altitude before I started my build up, and I felt like I – had the benefit of that the whole time. So yeah, just going to try that again.
That's her secret sauce, people.
Yeah, we'll see.
You ever seen one of those altitude tents?
Yeah, people have talked to me about those. You can actually get altitude rooms in your house. I don't know. Yeah, but then you have to spend like a certain number of hours a day in the tent, and I just couldn't do it. I don't think I'd want to do it. I think, I get cabin fever in my room or my tent. So maybe I can see why you'd use it if you're coming down from altitude and you're trying to extend the benefit, but I don't train up at altitude enough, I think.
So I think we talked to you just over a year ago, and you certainly haven't let any grass grow under your feet. Huge congratulations on making the Women's U.S. Olympic Marathon team. That is so exciting. Maybe we can start off by you talking about what your build up to the Olympic trials looked like. How did that go for you?
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all. And the buildup actually was pretty smooth. We didn't know because I was coming out of Chicago in the fall. We're like, well, we'll see how my body comes out of that. We were trying to take like calculated risks because I felt like I needed more experience in the marathon, and I really wanted to do either a late summer or early fall marathon before the trials. But then at the same time, you're like, well, you also want to make sure you come out of that well so that you can attack the next one. But luckily, I came out of Chicago just as well as I did in 2022. Every time I've run that race, I've come out of it really well. So that went well. And then we decided to do, I think, 6 to 7 weeks of my buildup. The first 6 to 7 weeks were in Phoenix, Arizona. And I train here a lot, so I'm really familiar with it. I know where to go for my workouts. I know where to go if I need treatment or a massage. I just am so familiar with it here. And we debated doing the whole buildup in Orlando, but we just thought it was like, that was too big of a risk before such an important race to go train somewhere I've never trained before, just in case there's any hiccups or anything we just didn't expect. So 3 weeks before the race, we decided to go to Orlando to adapt to the weather. And yeah, that seemed to like really work out well, because there were a few things that popped up, but nothing was that big of a hurdle. But I was glad I did a big chunk of it somewhere I was familiar with. In the last 3 weeks, I had time to adjust to the weather. And I was talking to someone recently. I actually had struggled with allergies in Orlando, so I needed time to adjust to that. So I think we like really kind of nailed that, but at the same time, we didn't know. Like in hindsight, like you're able to assess it better. But yeah, it worked out well.
And it all comes down to the one race, right?
Yeah, I know. The one day.
Man, it must feel awesome though, huh? To have the peace of mind knowing that you made the team. So at least that pressure's taken.
Yeah, definitely. It's really exciting to know I'll be competing in Paris representing the US. So yeah, it is. It's a lot of pressure, but then I think that is the benefit to our system, is that like if you can handle the pressure and you can show up and perform on the day, like that's what you need to do on the world stage. So it is a lot of pressure, and it's tough. You have to figure out how to navigate it the best you can. It's not that you don't feel it. You just have to figure out how to work with it. And so, yeah, that's luckily I have a really good team surrounding me. So I had a lot of help, but yeah, I'm really, really excited about it.
So on race day at the trials, did everything go according to plan, or was there anything unexpected that happened?
No, yeah, it didn't go according to plan. it rarely does. Yeah. I've had a few races, like a few that go like according to plan A, but usually I just have to pivot. And I had to pivot earlier than I expected. I've talked about this a bunch already, but I got another side stitch, which is what I got in Chicago in 2023. And we have some more theories on what's causing them, but yeah, I was like really hoping not to get one. So yeah. I got it early on, mile 8, and then I was able to ease off, and it was able to, the stitch was able to ease off and just got tight after a while and stopped cramping. So I was able to work with it this time. And that actually was the benefit of doing a fall marathon, as I had more experience and I knew what to do. But still, yeah, it kind of threw my plan A out the window earlier than I wanted to.
Define ease off.
Yeah.
Like so, 1 second.
I didn't pay attention to our splits. I was leading the front of the pack with Kira D'Amato, and I just went straight to the back. And I could tell we slowed down. I just didn't know how much. I wasn't really looking at splits. I wasn't really paying attention. But I could tell it did slow down maybe a few seconds a mile. I'm not sure. I don't know if I ever went back and looked exactly. But I could tell we did slow down a bit. And it was just enough to get like I think it's your diaphragm. So my diaphragm was like spasming and cramping, and it was enough to get it to calm down. And yeah, so it worked, but like I wouldn't have known to do that if I hadn't done Chicago. So so sometimes you just have to learn through experience. And with the marathon, there's definitely a big learning curve for a lot of reasons.
So I wonder what Kira was thinking when you dropped to the back.
Yeah, I know. I talked to her after the race, and she, yeah, like, you know, Kira, she's really nice about it. But I've also been in the position before where you're leading with someone else, you're supposed to lead with someone else, and then they don't come up. And like, you kind of just assume something went wrong. So my senior year of college, someone came up to me before the NCAA final and the 5K and was like, hey, do you want to lead the race together? Because we have a similar racing style. And we're like, let's just make it hard from the start. It was actually her idea. And I was like, sure, I'll do it. And I started, and then she never came up. And I ended up just leading the whole race. But I assumed in the moment, I was like, oh, she's like probably just having a bad day. And I mean, if she just sat on me and seconded the whole time, like that would have been one thing and like outkicked me at the end. But it just happened. I don't know. Yeah. That's just racing. And like everyone knows your race plan can have to change. And you know, other people's as well. Like things happen, you have to adapt for. So, but yeah, no, it's cool to see Kiera like bounce back so fast and enter the 15K and just crush it. So yeah.
That was great. I feel like women's marathoning is really deep right now, which is great. You know, there's just an awesome field, and everyone maybe didn't have the greatest day that they wanted at the trials, but you know, they're coming back and doing some awesome things on their own. So that is really exciting to see.
No, it is. Yeah. And that's, I guess, the nice thing of our sport. There's always something around the corner. The Olympics do get built up so much. And I know that feeling of not having it go your way or how you like hoped it would on race day at the trials. But like, luckily, there's just so many big things in our sport and you can just move on to plan your next race or your next summer or fall marathon. And there's always something around the corner.
So this will be your second Olympics. And I don't remember if I asked you this before, but are you going to get one of those Olympic ring tattoos?
I think you might have asked me that before. Everyone keeps asking me that. I thought no after Tokyo. I didn't think I was going to get one, but now I'm kind of like debating it. There's two women I've seen and I like where they have them. Ellie St. Pierre has one on her upper quad. So you only see it when she's racing. And I just think that looks cool. And Natasha Wodak is a Canadian marathoner. And I like hers. It's very like faint and kind of dainty, but it's on her forearm. And I just think that kind of looks cool. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see.
Get a temporary one first. Play I know. With the placement. Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. I ordered all this like jewelry after Tokyo. And then I'd like wear the ring for a bit. And then I stopped and I wore the, I don't know what it is about the rings. I'm like, sometimes I want to,
That would have been a good April Fool's social media post. You could have got a temporary ring tattoo,
a neck one or something,
put it on your neck or your forehead.
Oh, this is like 2 days late.
Yeah. For next year, you can.
Okay. I'll think of it next time.
So speaking about the Paris Olympics, what are the next few months of training, I guess 4 months of training going to look like for you? Are you going to go to France to run the course at all? What is the plan?
I did go to France for like 72 hours. We were in and out so fast. And we went and looked at the course. I don't think I'm going to go there to train on the course. And we actually realized when we were in Paris, I don't know if I'm even going to do the like 10 days or 2 weeks before the race in Paris or not, because the running there actually seemed a little difficult. So, but yeah, we saw the course, I guess. And that was good to see. It's very unique. It's very different. It's going to be a very different buildup than the past ones I've done. But yeah, I think it'll be like an interesting race and I think it'll lead to interesting results. So you just hope it shakes out in your favor. But yeah, I'm going to do like everything I can to prepare for the hills. They're pretty intense. They're long and they're steep. The one I think I'm like the most apprehensive about is like there's this really steep downhill at 30K. And you go up a steep uphill before it. But like when you get to it's around 30K, like it's very, very steep. And so just preparing, like getting used to running downhill and getting used to that pounding, but without overdoing it, you don't want to injure yourself doing too much downhill running. But yeah, I think I'm going to try to get strong, you know, talk to my physical therapist, my chiropractor, and ask like what kind of strength work I can do in the gym to prepare my body for that kind of pounding. But yeah, no, I'm excited about it. I got really excited seeing it. It felt real.
Well, that's going to be here before we know it. And probably a lot of our listeners are going to be watching you on TV. And when we watch you, what should we know? Like, what's going on in your mind when you're at the starting line? Like, how are you dealing with the nerves? What's the internal chatter like at a thing like that?
I feel like my nerves come like in the days leading up, but then when I'm on the start line, I don't actually feel as nervous, like a little bit nervous, like there's some butterflies, but I'm just I am just like, whoa, this is cool. It's like actually what I'm thinking.
Oh, that's great.
It's like not that many deep thoughts going on in my head on the start line of a marathon. And then like the first half, I am just trying to like stay relaxed. And it's different than the track. In the track, I felt like I had to be so on very early on in a race and just, you know, aware of everything happening. But in a marathon, you want to be relaxed and kind of in control, especially going through halfway. So yeah, just like trying to chill a bit. I do get nervous, but yeah, once I'm on the starting line, like the work's all done at that point, you can't really change anything. So you just have to like trust your race instincts and the work you've done to the best of your abilities up until that point. And then, yeah, it's just another marathon.
Is it safe to say that you try to have fun Or is there no fun involved?
No, I do try. It is fun. I wouldn't keep doing it if it wasn't fun. Okay. I'm never like smiling in my race pictures, but I do enjoy it. I do like racing. I like the challenge of it. I like to me, that's like the fun part is like the challenge and trying to like race other people and learn like how to race different distances and figuring out like what kind of works and clicks for me in training. Like that's the really fun part. And then I get to go race and just see what I can do. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm never like smiling in my photos, but I don't know. I guess I'm just so focused. That's one thing I'm really good at is I'm just really good at focusing. And so, yeah, I feel like the emotion doesn't show until like after the race is finished and that part of my brain's turned off.
Well, I've been in races before thinking that I was smiling. And then I look back at the photos. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I look terrible. Yeah. Like that was not my internal thought structure at that point. I just,
you were smiling on the inside.
I was trying to smile, but it was not coming out. So
that would be me.
You're smiling on the inside. That's okay. That's right.
Yeah.
Quick break to thank our awesome sponsor, Sidekick. You know, as a runner, you get this toolbox of stuff that you can have right there at home to help you keep doing what you love. We're talking about injury prevention and injury treatment tools, and we've been fans of Sidekick for a long time, even before they became a sponsor of the podcast. Angie, you've been all about that muscle scraping, haven't you?
Well, it first kind of came to my attention when I was at my physical therapist office getting my hamstring treated a few years ago, and they were using tools just like the Sidekick tools, and I thought, I can do that at home. I'm not saying these are a substitute for physical therapy,
right?
But like you were saying, Trevor, they're great to have at home as an adjunct to treatments like that. And it's a great way to do maintenance on your body so that you don't develop a chronic injury. These are loved by professional marathoners like Molly Seidel and Sarah Hall. And they are clinical grade muscle scrapers to help relieve pain from nagging injuries or tightness from running. So if you're suffering from something like plantar fasciitis, shin splints, IT band pain, hip pain, or generally tight calves, muscle scraping therapy works by improving blood circulation and releasing tension in the muscles.
Yeah, they are super high quality too. They're going to last you forever. We recommend getting the My Personal PT bundle. To make it even better, you can get 15% off with our handy link, sidekick.com/MTA. So to take control of your injury and recovery, go to sidekick.com/MTA. Use that link for 15% off.
Now, I know there's a lot of pressure going into the Olympic Games, you know, probably from others as well as self-induced pressure. What do you do to manage stress on a regular basis and combat that negative thinking that obviously, you know, can pop into your head like, oh, how am I going to handle that big hill or, you know, any aspect of it?
There's so much. I get asked all the time about stress and pressure. And there's just like, I feel like it's like a toolbox in my head of all these things I do. And so it's like, I don't have one answer of like, oh, this is what I do. Like, it depends on the circumstances or what it is I'm dealing with at the time. But I guess when it comes to the hills specifically, I do put a lot of faith and trust in my like team of people I surround myself with. Like, I know they're going to help me to the best of their abilities. And I feel like I surround myself with just some of the best in the sport, that people are the best at their jobs. And so if my coach is like, well, I think you should do this training for these hills, and my chiropractor is like, I think you should do this to strengthen yourself for these hills, like, I'm just going to do that. And I think on race day, you can't be like, oh no, I hope I don't blow up. you can't be like second guessing things at that point. Like, you just have to like commit to your plan. And then in hindsight, you can tweak things. You can be like, okay, well, maybe we should have done this differently, or I'll do this differently the next time. But like in the moment, you just have to kind of trust in what you did, what you committed to. So sometimes like before really big races, like the trials, if I'm getting a bit nervous, like in the week or two leading up, doing things like, it just sounds simple, maybe a bit boring, but like going for a walk with my husband and my dogs, or meeting up with a friend FaceTiming a friend. Like, I remember when I was in Florida, FaceTiming some friends, that just like, it's just kind of a nice like grounding thing. And it reminds you like, oh, it's just like another race. Yeah, I don't know. There's so many things. I feel like I've had a lot of help from sports psych therapists in the past, regular therapists, like my husband's a therapist. We talk a lot about ideas. And I like try to read books on runners, what they've done to handle stress and pressure. And, you know, I have people's brains to pick too. I have Molly Huddle, Kim Smith. I've just got people around me I can ask if I need help with something. So I guess that's a bit of all that too. That really helps.
I love that idea, though, of having a toolbox, sort of like an emotional, mental, and physical toolbox.
Yeah.
And so you kind of like build yourself up until race day. And then on race day, obviously, you're going to have to make maybe some fine tuning because things are not going to go exactly according to plan. But being able to pull out those tools as you need them. That's an awesome concept. I like that.
Yeah. Because it's not like, I think sometimes people, I've been asked in the past, like, oh, do you not ever experience any nerves or any like anxiety or anything? It's like, no, of course I do. I just like, you have to find ways to manage it the best you can. It's not like the absence of that. You just find ways to work with it.
So you mentioned books. What genre of books do you gravitate toward?
I do like reading other runners' books. I enjoy that because I feel like it's kind of almost like fun homework. Like you're learning from like the best. I like reading historical fiction, I'd say. Those are probably the two I read the most. I don't do audiobooks. I like those make me really sleepy. Everyone says I should because I have to like carry books with me when I travel. And they're like, you should just get an audiobook. And I'm like, I'll fall asleep. So yeah, that doesn't work for me.
Unless you need to fall asleep, then you know what to do.
Yeah, true. Actually, that is what I do sometimes when I'm having trouble sleeping is I put on an audiobook. Or
find a narrator with a droning voice.
Yeah. And just or like a podcast that like makes me sleepy. I'll put that on and that actually really helps.
So that's interesting that you read books about running, even though you know every day you're living and breathing running, right? It's your career, it's your daily bread. But then you also read books about running. So you're not sick of running yet enough to say, I want to take a break from running. Give me something else.
Well, there definitely are times I like do want to turn my brain off from thinking and talking about running for sure. But then I also like learning about it because it's like, I guess I am like a student of the sport still. So I recommended Dina's book after the marathon and so many people messaged me being like, oh, I started Dina's book.
That is an amazing book.
Or like there's just little bits of like wisdom they just drop in there. And you're like, oh, that's an interesting way of thinking about something or framing something or maybe you can like relate it to your own experience. And I like picking up things. It's like a fine line because I don't like comparing myself too much to other people and what they do and what works for them, but I also like having an open mind at the same time, like, oh, there's not just one way of doing things. And there's more perspectives out there and maybe someone has a better perspective than me on something. So yeah, it's like a fine line. Yeah.
Have you ever had a publisher approach you about writing a book?
No, I have like talked to my husband about that. I'm like, oh, I wonder if I'd ever write one someday. I don't know what I'd write about, but
you guys could co-write one. You know, he could give like the therapist part.
Yeah, we have joked about it or just writing a book from like my perspective and his perspective and me being like, oh, I was like so calm that day and him being like, she was not calm that day.
Yeah. Actually, this is what went down.
I think that'd be kind of entertaining.
Yeah. What do you think about ultra marathoners? Do you ever read books by ultra runners?
I haven't yet, but I follow some on Instagram. But no, I haven't. I don't know. The marathon's the furthest I go. I don't think I'll go any further for me. But I do like reading and hearing about other people's experiences. So maybe should pick up some more books on that. But yeah, I think 26.2 is my max.
I think with ultra runners, they, you know, the mindset stuff, they really dial into that a lot because, you know, to go beyond the marathon, I mean, marathons are difficult as it is, but to go beyond the marathon, you know, you really have to like excise some of those mental demons.
Oh, definitely.
Really have to have a strong toolbox to be able to draw from because otherwise you can easily talk yourself out of.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Going further.
That's a whole nother beast. Yeah. But yeah, it's inspiring what they do because like I said, I think 26.2 is as far as I can go. So I'm amazed.
Well, we talked to this dude named Dave Proctor who ran across Canada. He set the trans-Canadian record.
Wow.
And he was doing like 100K a day on a fractured foot. And he told us that he thinks racing a marathon is harder than running across Canada.
Really?
So there you go.
You just have to slow your pace down.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Some mad respect.
Well, I think what he did sounds sounds a bit harder, but
so you mentioned earlier, you know, preparing for the hills in Paris and things like that. Do you have a regular strength training routine? What does that look like? You know, how do you plan to change it up, if any, for the games?
Yeah, I'll probably change it up a little bit some, but I do kind of keep the same. Like I switch up maybe the exercises I do, but I try to make sure I'm working the same muscle groups. I've kind of really worked on that ever since Tokyo. I had a pretty bad injury coming out of Tokyo. And it was actually an injury I had dealt with a lot earlier in my career. And we really focused on gym work after that. And yeah, so like, luckily, like I have had things pop up here and there, but knock on wood, nothing as long or as bad as that injury was. So I do a lot, like for me, hamstrings are really important, working the whole like posterior chain, you know, quads will be important, core. As I've gotten older, lower leg strength work, which I never did before, but that's become something I have to do regularly as well. And actually posture stuff as well. So yeah, just trying to hit everything. But I might switch up the exercises, but I really try to make sure I'm not neglecting anything. Like I do take, my husband takes regular videos of just my form when I'm running so that we can see if anything's breaking down or looks a little off. And yeah, so that's kind of a good way to like look and see how things are moving.
Does he do that from a bicycle, like while you're running?
Yeah, he stopped working out. when was it? He used to run my workouts with me, and then we realized that biking was just as effective, and he immediately stopped. he was like, I'm not running anymore. So now he bikes, and yeah, and the videos have been helpful. I use them like in my Instagram posts a lot, but they're actually, for the most part, just looking at form.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure prevention is so important, because if you let something go too long, it's really hard to correct. So, you know, things like form issues.
Yeah, no, definitely. Or if like I have an injury and then I just take time off and it heals, but I'm still moving in the same pattern, then like it can just come back. So yeah, just making sure to correct any imbalances and things like that's pretty important.
So you said he used to run with you? He must be one hell of a runner.
Yeah. We met in college. We were both runners at Providence College. And yeah, I think he thought my workouts were going to be a lot easier than they were when he first started doing them. And then he's like, actually, no, like at the time when he started doing my workouts, I was on the track more. And so he'd do workouts with me and Molly Huddle. And he's like, I feel like I always have to be in like 15 minute 5K shape. And that's like, for him, like it sounded really slow when he first started doing my workouts, but he's like, no, that's actually not as easy as I thought. And gradually he started doing less, like fewer and fewer workouts. He like cut out, I think, tempos first. And then he cut out, what was it? Like, I don't even remember. Just he stopped doing workout by workout. Now he bikes all of them, which is nice. And we run together on easy days sometimes, but yeah, no more workouts.
It's probably still hard to keep up even on a bike.
It looks hard to pace it on a bike, but he does a pretty good job with it. So, getting the pace down. Sometimes I'm watching people who, like, I think Emma Coburn, I see her videos on a track and she's running right behind Joe on a bike and they are so close and he must be like nailing the pace. But I'm also I'm just kind of amazed because there's like a gap between me and Shane so that I don't hit him. Maybe it's Sarah Hall does that too.
Sarah Hall. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm thinking of them actually. He definitely has the pace nailed down and she's just right on him. And I'm just like so impressed.
So we are big fans of UCAN and they are a sponsor of yours. So yeah. I'm just curious, how are you using UCAN these days for your training and races?
In quite a few different ways. I started using UCAN, I think it was end of 2021, which would have been coming out of Tokyo when I was injured. So I wasn't actually marathon training at that point, but I started just kind of sprinkling their products in with other and like in place of other products I had been using. And the first one I started using was their protein drink, the Energy Plus Protein. Because I wasn't doing marathon training at the time. I was like, well, I am starting to do some workouts and I like having a protein drink right after. And immediately I'm like, oh, so your stomach doesn't have to hurt after you down a protein drink. And I think it's because they have like the protein to carb ratio down right. And that's why I felt so much better. But yeah, so I started with that. And then I slowly just started like trading some things out. Like before my long runs, I started using the energy powder in place of a sugary drink. And I've actually met other runners who that's like what they started doing too, because it just sits better. I feel less like bloated. And I was like, oh, this is helping me, like giving me energy throughout the long run. And I'm feeling better starting off. And then I started like throwing in the energy during my long runs. And the edge gels I use on like workout days when I'm like pre-workout or pre-race, like as something last minute, just to have that extra energy there. But yeah, I find really just like playing around with it really benefited me. And like, even like now on race day, like I still take sugary gels every now and then during the race, but having the UCAN there really complements that. And I have no stomach issues now. I know I talk about like the side stitches, but that's not like, I'm not just saying that. We know it's not a fueling thing. It's a diaphragm, like tension or breathing thing. Mm-hmm. Like it just like, I feel like I've nailed my fueling at this point. So
it's good.
Testing things out in workouts and long runs is the advice I give people who are trying to figure out what fueling works for them, and playing around with substituting things here and there, and just one at a time. So you can be like, oh, like this is how I felt different after this long run versus the last time. But yeah, UCAN's been just such a big support the last few years. And yeah, I feel lucky to have been working with them.
Yeah, they're awesome. I remember when we first heard of them, all they had was the drink mix that you had to mix with water.
The energy powder, yeah.
But now those gels, man, they're so handy.
Yeah, I like using the gels when I'm like, get a late start to the day too. Like when I wake up and I get distracted emailing people or doing some stuff, like I'm making it sound productive. Sometimes I get behind not doing productive things. I just take too long. I take too long to get out the door. But like I sometimes will just have one then, or like I'll carry it with me like in my pocket, and like halfway through my 13 or 14 mile run, I'll just take it. And it's just so easy. You don't need water with it. So with other gels, I think you're supposed to take water because I think that can cause cramping. Yeah. So I think I like that about the gels. You can just have it there.
You think you're going to take some with you to Paris?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's nice. They just shipped some to me last week. So I have some with me at Altitude Camp too. So
nice.
Oh, cool. So right now it's April 3rd. Did you see what they did for April Fools on their Instagram?
No, I missed all these April Fools jokes.
They said, we're launching a new product. It's called You Milk. It was like UCAN flavored milk.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
It was like milk with like their superstarch in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're like combining your regular milk or whatever.
I'm like, look for that.
This is like, seems very niche, you know, like who's going to buy it? And then I'm like, oh, April Fools.
That's funny. I didn't see that. I'll have to go look.
So this question just for fun. Where's somewhere that you would like to travel that you haven't traveled to yet?
Well, I know I've been there already, but I feel like it doesn't count. I'd like to go back to Japan because I feel like that didn't count.
Well, you were under COVID restrictions pretty much.
Yeah.
I could have been anywhere. I saw the village and the practice track and the stadium and in the bus like to and from. I'm like, this actually looks like such a cool city and I'd love to go back to Japan. So
yes.
But I have been there technically. So,
we just got back from Japan. It is
did
awesome.
You?
Yeah.
How was it?
You need to run the Tokyo Marathon next year. That would be an amazing.
That would be a good time.
Yes.
You probably don't want to work when you go to Japan though. You want to have a vacation.
Well, she could run the marathon and then take a vacation afterwards. Yeah. So it's like kind of like a paid work trip.
Yeah, exactly. I plan my marathons around where I want a vacation.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think Tokyo would be really cool to go back to. My sister's been to Sri Lanka actually twice in the past year.
Ooh.
And that looks really cool. So I kind of want to go with her and her boyfriend the next time they go. I'll just third wheel them. She was in Sri Lanka when I was in Orlando getting ready for the trials. And in our family group text, we were just sharing, like, I was like, oh, I saw like a peacock or something today or an alligator. But she'd like send messages to our group chat of like a jaguar, or like she was at an elephant orphanage, or she was like having the way cooler trip. And I was just trying to be competitive. And she's like, you think it's hot and humid near you. It's way worse near us. And our air conditioning's not working. But yeah, so anyway, that always looks cool when they go there. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of places still. Yeah, we'll have to.
And lots of options.
Yeah.
So you got an MBA from Providence College. Do you envision yourself using that after you retire from professional running? Not that we're in any hurry for you to retire, but you know, like, what do you envision yourself doing if you allow yourself to daydream about your life after running?
So I actually didn't technically finish it. I got like 3/4 of the way through, and then we moved to Arizona, and they didn't have online classes at the time.
Interesting.
Because that was pre-COVID. So I don't know. They said I could always come back and finish it, but I think there is like a timeline on it. I think I might have passed that. So, but I do think I'd want to stay in the sport. I don't know exactly in what way, but I don't know. Sometimes it's cool seeing what like goes on behind the scenes at like New York City Marathon or something like that. I'm like, oh, it's kind of chaos, but it's amazing. I must just be addicted to that because I think it looks so fun. Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to do something like that. I'm not sure. Maybe working with athletes in some capacity. I'm not sure exactly how. But I think I'd like to stay in the sport because I do love it. And then someday when I'm like retired from working in general, I want to work at like or volunteer like an animal shelter.
Yes.
And
work,
yeah. And like find all the dogs' homes, and I'll probably bring like 10 of them home with me to foster. And my husband will be like, what are you doing? But that's my plan.
You're a dog mom now, right?
Yeah, we have two dogs. We had a golden retriever that passed away a couple years ago. And now we have a beagle we rescued and a husky Australian cattle dog mix that we also rescued.
High energy breed there.
Yeah, she's actually pretty mellow for a husky. I mean, she's very sassy and very stubborn. So she definitely has that. But I kind of love it. Like, I love her attitude. She's the perfect combination of like sassy and sweet is what I say, because she's has such an attitude and she'll let you know if she's annoyed at you. But then she's so sweet. She'll just like cuddle on up to you. And she's so great with like kids or elderly people. I combined that there. Like, she's great with Molly Huddle's daughter. And then there's like this old man that lives across the street from us that just adores her. And she's like so sweet around him. And like, aww, she has like this emotional intelligence, I can tell. But yeah, so anyway, we like our dogs. Yeah, we like cats too, but I'm unfortunately allergic. So my husband thinks I'm making it up. He grew up with four cats. And he's like, you're making up that allergy. And because it's one I developed later in life. And I'm like, actually pretty allergic to them. So I'm like, no, I swear I'm not.
We have a couple of cats. And I think at least a couple of people in our family are allergic to cats. But we don't have to run professionally. You can't exactly have a lot of breathing problems when you're trying to combine that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like, maybe when you retire. And I'm like, maybe. So but yeah, he grew up with four cats. And I remember I worked so hard to get like one of his cats to like me, because it used to just avoid me whenever I'd show up at his house in college. And then eventually it started liking me. And that was like around the time I started struggling. And I was like, oh no, after all this work.
Well, cats like people who are allergic to them better. We have a very standoffish cat that will not give anyone the time of day unless someone is allergic to them, comes into our house. Like, he's out there like rubbing against their leg, like, hello person, I like you. And they're like, I'm allergic. And we're like, oh no.
I remember.
Somehow they know.
This cat was on my lap after like 8 years of trying to get it to like me. And I was like tearing up because my eyes were all red and itchy. My throat was so sore. And I was like, I wanted this for years.
Now I have it. It's terrible.
See, the cat just waited till you got allergic.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I swear. Maybe I just didn't notice. I don't know. I think you can develop them later. I had a roommate in college that had a cat. We lived on different floors of the same house, but like I had no issues. And yeah, just one day, like I woke up in my husband's house. It was like around our wedding. And I'm like, I think I'm allergic to cats. And I'm definitely allergic to cats. It was weird.
Life is strange.
It is. Yeah. But love our little furry friends.
Well, it's been an honor to talk to you again, Emily. Thanks for taking time to join us here on the podcast. Congrats on making the Olympic team. And we're definitely looking forward to watching you and the whole team this summer. From afar.
Right. That's right.
Well, thanks so much. And thanks for the good questions.
You bet. It's been fun. If people want to follow you on Instagram and see some of those great photos that your husband takes from the bike or videos, what's your Instagram handle we can send people to?
It's M_Sisson_.
All right. Perfect. All right. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Emily Sisson. Definitely give her a follow over there on Instagram. I know these elite runners, you know, when they're training for a huge thing like the Olympics, their time is really valuable. They've got to be super intentional about training and resting, right? So it's definitely not something that's lost on us, the fact that we got to have her on the podcast. So yeah. Thanks again, our friends at UCAN, for making this interview possible. And hey, if we can help you in any way, reach out. We got a contact form on our website. You can find us at marathontrainingacademy.com, or you can send us a message on Facebook or Instagram. We are at Marathon Academy. We're also posting lots of videos and inspirational stuff over there on Instagram. We appreciate you. Thank you for being a listener. Thanks for subscribing to the podcast and sharing it. Until next time, keep taking action in your health. And remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Right on my way.